Morning. Today's daf in Mechoros is Chav Ches. We are on the top of Chav Ches Amud Aleph. We're at the two dots. We are going to tackle now the end of the Mishnah. If you take a look back at the Mishnah on Chav Vav Amud Beis, otherwise known as the beginning of the fourth parak of Mechoros, so the Mishnah starts off with a discussion of responsibility of taking care of this Bechor. Bechor, there are basically two variables to take into consideration, a Bechor Balmum versus a Bechor Tam. Bechor Tam, an unblemished animal. So an unblemished animal is, that's one variable. And the second variable is whether we're talking about Bizman Beis HaMikdash or not Bizman Beis HaMikdash. Now these two variables obviously are going to make a world of difference in terms of what's to be done with the Bechor. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so the Bechor as a Tamim is offered as a Karban, period. It's part of the Matnos Kahuna, it's one of the gifts to the Kohen. The owner of the animal who had the Bechor born in his flock gives the Bechor over to the Kohen. The Kohen then takes the animal, brings it to the Beis HaMikdash and offers it as a Karban, and effectively it's treated as a Shlamim. If it is during the time of the Beis HaMikdash and the animal becomes a blemished animal, so then it's still Manas Kahuna, it's given to the Kohen. The Kohen eats it on his own. He does not have to bring it as a Karban. He can't bring it as a Karban. It has a Balmum. In the time when there's no Beis HaMikdash, so now things get a little bit difficult, a little more challenging. Because when the Bechor is a Tamim, so that means to say that it's to be offered on the Beis HaMikdash, on the Mizbeach, in the Beis HaMikdash. There is no Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash, and so therefore it's just basically kept in an indefinite stage. It's basically you're waiting in the you're waiting on the plane, but there is no plane to take, and you're just waiting. And so you just basically have to sit there and wait till the animal gets a blemish. And the challenge gets amplified by the fact that you can't put a blemish on the animal. The blemish has to come organically. And we're talking about a blemish. We're talking about a physical external blemish. And it just simply could take a week, a month, a year, or maybe never, in terms of when the blemish is going to come around. Then, once it receives a blemish, again, it's Matnas Kahuna, it's still gifts to the Kohen. The Kohen then takes it and then eats it. Okay, so these are the considerations in terms of what's to be done with the Bechor, which then begs the question which the mission dealt with yesterday, and that is, well, who's responsible to take care of the animal during all this time? So, that's what we saw yesterday in the Mishnah. If we can go back to the Mishnah very quickly. So the Mishnah actually gave us the exact format in terms of what's to be done with the Bechor. So Ad Kam Yisrael Chayav L'Tapel B'Bechor. So how long is Yisrael now required to take care of the Bechor? So B'Daka Shoshim Yom V'Gasa Chamishim Yom. I'm reviewing the Mishnah as we learned yesterday. So if it's a small animal, 30 days, and if it's a larger animal, 50 days. And Rabbi Yossi Amar B'Daka Shoshim Chadashim, and Rabbi Yossi says 3 months. Now Amar Lo Kohen B'Soch HaZman Taneo Li. Now when the Kohen says to him, you know what, give it to me, Harizel Lo Yinenu Lo. So you do not give it to him. Now, if the animal is a balmum, if it's a blemished animal, and he says, give it to me so that I can eat it, so then that would be okay. Now, all this was shelo b'shas hamikdash. This was all during the time, not during the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so then everything got a lot easier. Because in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, there was an immediate consequence of giving the Bechor to the Kohen. And that's exactly the next point of the Mishnah. Okay, good. So if he demands it immediately in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so then you can. Now, as far as the Bechor is concerned, so it should be consumed within a year. That's the next part of the Mishnah, the next point of the Mishnah. And the Gemara quotes a drasha, Shenemar lefnei Hashem lekecha tochlenu shana b'shana. Okay. So far, so good. Everything was great. This is all but a review of what we did yesterday. And then we get to the end of the Mishnah. Now I'm going to read the end of the Mishnah. I did this yesterday. And what we're going to try to do is wrap our heads around what exactly the Mishnah is trying to make at the very last point, at the very last part. The Mishnah then goes on to describe, Nola lo mum b'soch shna so, v'sha lekaimo, kol shnei masar chodesh. And then, la'achar yud beis chodesh, ena v'sha lekaimo el olam yom. Seemingly, the Mishnah seems to be giving us the difference between whether it develops a blemish before its year or after its year. Now, at this point in time, the Mishnah is talking about beis HaMikdash, when there is no beis HaMikdash. Meaning, the overall structure of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah is describing what is to be done, who is to take care of the animal, shelo b'shas HaMikdash. Now, the Mishnah does interject in the middle and say, and oh, by the way, during the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you know, if he wants it, you can give it to him immediately. Good. So, but that's just an interjection in the Mishnah. But structurally, the Mishnah is really describing what is to be done, shelo b'shas HaMikdash. So here's what we know. We know that as far as the base minimum requirements of taking care of the animal, so the owner of the animal, I say owner, by the way, I don't mean the Kohen right now. I mean the person where the animal's flock was born into. So the owner of the animal now is responsible to take it minimally for 30 days and 50 days, and afterwards he can give it on to a Kohen. Okay. Now, what the end of the Mishnah seems to be indicating is, okay, but now what if a blemish develops before the year's end versus after the year's end? Because now once the blemish develops, so now you're on the clock. Why are you on the clock? Because we learned that a bechor fundamentally should be consumed within a year. Right? The Gemara, in the Mishnah, in fact, brought even a drasha about it. So once the blemish develops, you're on the clock. In other words, it should be shechted before the year's over. Now, the Mishnah at the end seems to be describing the following scenario. Okay, so we have a blemish, we know we're on the clock, and I can't find a Kohen. Meaning, so at this point in time now, what do I do? So it sounds like from the Mishnah, basically what you do is you try your best to hunt down a Kohen, and if you can't do so, so now what? So this is what we're going to be struggling with at the end of the Mishnah. So nolo, I'm just rereading the last line of the Mishnah, and then we're going to go right into our Gemara. Nolo mum besoch shnaso. So if a blemish develops within the year, reshalekaimo kol shnei masar chodesh. So you're still given till the end of the year. Sounds like from the Mishnah, but no more than that. And the Mishnah says, and la'achar yud beis chodesh. So in reshalekaimo alalam yom. If the blemish develops after the year, so then you only have but 30 days. Okay. Now, did I do a good job reading the Mishnah? We're going to find out in just a moment as we see the Gemara inside. The Gemara starts off now in Chav Chesem and Alfred, where we left off yesterday, at the two dots. So the Gemara's question now is basically, what was the correct way and how to read the Mishnah? So, Ibailu, Hechi Kamar, Nolo Besoch Shnaso Rashala Kamakul Yud Beis Chodesh, Ula Acher Shnaso Nami Shoshim. Now, is the Mishnah making just one statement, which basically means I did not do a good job reading the Mishnah? Meaning, maybe the way the Mishnah should read is as follows, is that you, the owner of the animal, who has the Bechor, and again, we're not talking about in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, so you have a Bechor, and now basically, the only value that it has to the Kohen is only when it has a blemish, and if it doesn't have a blemish, he can't eat it yet, but right now, it's not even at the hands of the Kohen. Right now, you're still holding on to it. And so is the Mishnah saying as follows. Basically, you have a year and a month. Is that one? That's one possibility of how to read the Mishnah. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you do at the end of the year and the month? Meaning now that it has a blemish and you are given a year and you're given extension of a month, what do you do with it at that point in time? Seemingly, you have to shecht it. But if you don't have a Kohen, then what was the point? What's the point of shechting it? Well, we're going to address that question in just a moment. That's one way to read the Mishnah. Or maybe no. Maybe the correct way to read the Mishnah is the way that I originally presented it, which is that the Mishnah is making two separate points. Point number one of the Mishnah. If, let's say, a blemish develops within the year, so then you must shecht it by year's end. Whether you find a Kohen, yes or no, doesn't matter. You have to shecht it by year's end. Meaning, once it develops a blemish, so we go revert back to the halacha of, it has to be shechted within a year. And since it has to be shechted within a year, so that's it. By year's end, either you find a coin, you don't find a coin, doesn't matter. You have to shecht it. And ve'hecha denolo achash naso, and let's say it develops a blemish after 12 months. So on one hand, we're after the year, but at this very same time, where there's no base of mikdash, there's no way to offer it. So it's not that you're going to be shechting it, because shechting it is just simply going to mean that you're going to end up burying it. So after a year, you can hold on to it longer. But once it develops a blemish, now you're given a one-month extension. So, Eina Rishal Kaima Elo Shoshim. Ah, so Tashma. So the Gemara says, okay. So the Gemara says, now that we have given two plausible explanations of the Mishnah, either the Mishnah is making one statement or it's making two separate clauses. So the Gemara says, so we don't really, in the Mishnah itself, see the correct shot. So let's look at Brises, and various Brises may help us out. The Italian, the Gemara quotes one brisa. So, if let's say it was not fit to be shown to a chacham, and the way Rashi understands this is it doesn't have a blemish. So now, how long do you hold on to it for? 2 years, 3 years, meaning the Mishnah is basically saying however long you need to hold on to it. Meaning again, it's there's no base of mikdash, there's no mizbeach, there's no way to offer it. So basically, you hold on to it until it develops a blemish. So it could be 2 or 3 years. And once it is fit to be shown to a chacham, in other words, it has a blemish. So b'shoch shnasor v'shalakaymo kosh ne'matzeh chodesh, achar shnasor in v'shalakaymo afilo yom echad, ve'afilo sha achas. Ava mimnei shav esaveda labalem, amar v'shalakaymo shloshim yom. And then the Braisa goes on to say that really fundamentally, if it developed a blemish within the year, so really the truth of the matter is that once the year is over, that's it. Done. Year's over. It has a blemish. It needs to be shechted. However, because, and I'm going to quote the language of the Braisa one more time, however, because of this idea of Hashavas Aveda towards its owner, so therefore you're given a 30-month extension. Okay. 30-day. Thank you. 30-day extension. Okay. So in this Braisa, it got a little bit clear, but the truth of the matter is not a whole lot clear. In other words, in this Braisa, we basically are seeing the same idea. Without a blemish, you're basically holding on to it indefinitely. And then once it gets a blemish, so in the Braisa it says that if it gets a blemish within the year, so then really fundamentally it needs to be shechted by year's end. However, a 30-day extension, and then the Braisa is touting some idea of because of Hashavas Aveda Labalim. Now, Hashavas Aveda Labalim, what does that have anything to do with what our discussion is over here? So if you take a look at Rashi, the... Right, in Rishal Kama Afil Yom Echad. So, right, Rashi, V'kasar Adacha Anola Ba'amun B'soch Shnasokai. Right, Rashi points out that at this point in time we think that it's developing a blemish within its year. V'ketani Avam Mimnei Hashavas Aveda Labalim Dahainu. Kohen, D'shema Im Biyad Yisrael Have HaBechor L'mishka Kohen L'mitzvelei. What's going to end up happening is that we're not going to find a Kohen at this point in time. And what's going to happen now if we shecht it at this point in time? So, of course, the meat is going to spoil. And then if after 30 days you don't find a Kohen, your extension now is over, and you're going to have to shecht it. It's meat. It's obviously going to spoil. And they didn't have the freezers back in the day. Okay, fine. So you salt the animal, and basically you try to turn all the meat into jerky, and eventually you're going to end up finding a Kohen, and you're going to give him to him at that point in time. And when all said and done, the Braisa basically repeats the same idea as the Mishnah, but the Braisa is not much clearer. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. The Adayin, back to the Gemara, sorry. I'm going to get there. So, Okay, fine. But even in the Braisa itself, is that 30-day extension when it gets a blemish within the year, or only when it gets a blemish after the year? So Tashma, so the Gemara says, okay, so let's consider now the following. So Shmamina. So the Gemara says, okay, this Braisa over here is very clear. This Braisa describes the scenario as this follows. It is a Bechor. It doesn't have a blemish. 15 years, it's 15 years short of when its first year is up. Okay, we're 15 days before its first birthday. And now, finally, at this point in time, almost 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks before the year is over, it developed a blemish. Now, the Braisa over here says as follows. So you know what? Now you're on the clock. And your 30 days begin right now. So that means to say that you have 15 days now, plus another 15 days after the year is over. What has that just shown us? So with clarity, it's shown us the following. This 30-day extension is not automatic. Meaning what the Mishnah is not saying is that if it gets a blemish within the year, so you're given the year and you're given a 30-day extension. No, that's not the case. This 30-day extension is basically, once the blemish has now kicked in, so you have either till the year's end, or if you don't have from the time the blemish develops until the year is end 30 days, you're given 30 days. If it's after the year is over, you're given 30 days. Meaning, from the time that you have a blemish, you will have a minimum now of 30 days to find a Kohen. Locate a Kohen, shecht the animal, or give the animal to Kohen so that he could shecht it. That's all a given. But in other words, but the blemish that occurs within the year, that does not automatically give you 30 days after the year is over. It just simply means that from the time the blemish comes, you're going to have a 30-day extension. Shema mina. Mesayela Rebbe Elazar Damar Rebbe Elazar Nosam Shoshin Yom Mishashin Ola Bomom. Rebbe Elazar says it most succinctly, and this is really the point, is that once the blemish develops, now you have a 30-day extension. Now, if you're within a year, so there is no extension. Meaning if you're within a year and you have 30 days, so good, your 30 days has now been granted to you. If you're towards the end of the year, let's say 15 days before the end of the year, so okay, fine. So once the blemish develops, so then you're going to be given 30 days. But if there are 15 days left at the end of the year, that's part of your 30 days. If after the year is over, 2 years later, 3 years later, then a blemish develops, okay, then you're given 30 days. So basically it's a 30-day extension, but only if there is an extension. If there's no extension, if you're within the year, so then you're not given the 30 days. Now the Gemara has a slightly different version. Now in the second version, we're going all the way back to our original suggestion, which is that the 30 days is after the year is over, even though within the year, you have plenty of time. Now, sometimes in halacha, a month is considered a year. An example of that would be, let's say, for example, Arla. Right? We know that when you plant a tree, from the time that you plant the tree, so the first 3 years of that tree, so you're not allowed to get any benefit from any of the fruit that's grown. That's the Isser of Arla. How do we count years? So here we don't count years based on the birthday of the tree. We count it calendarically. So that means to say that if I planted this year counts as year one. Next year counts as year two, meaning when I say next year, I'm meaning Rosh Hashanah to the first day of Tishrei comes, that's going to be now year two. How long do I have to plant it within year one for it to be considered year one? So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us 1 month. 1 month within year one. So if I plant on the first day of Elul on year one, that now counts as year one. Put that in the books as year one. And now from that point going forward, next year is year two, et cetera, et cetera. So in halacha, we find that a month is considered a year. When the pasuk says shana b'shana, so it means year in year, it means that we have a year and another halachic year, which means another month. So in this version of Rebbe Elazar, you're given a year and a month, period. And this goes back to our original suggestion. But the Gemara says, but I don't like that original suggestion. Right? We had a brisa that clearly went against that original suggestion. And the Gemara says it right now. Meisvei. No, lamum b'chamisha so yom besoch shnaso mashum lo chamisha so yom achash shnaso hashlama in mehavelo. Right? The case of where it developed a blemish with only 15 days left to the end of the year. Now, according to the drasha, how long should you be given? 45 days. 15 days till the end of the year plus another month. But the brisa doesn't say that. The Braisa says 15 days plus another 15 days. So, Tiyufta de Rebbe Elazar, Tiyufta. So the Gemara says, okay. And so the second version of Rebbe Elazar is unsustainable. So we're going to go back to our first version of Rebbe Elazar, which is the Gemara's conclusion in terms of what the Mishnah means. So, to say it succinctly, so basically, how long is it that you have to take care of your Bechor? Again, we're talking about not at the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and and right now a Kohen is not readily available. So how long do you take care of it? You take care of it as long as it needs to be taken care of. But once it develops a blemish, so now you're on the clock. What does that mean you're on the clock? So if it develops a blemish within the year and there are 30 days, more than 30 days left within the year, so that's it. You'll have to the end of the year, period. And it has to be given to a kohen and consumed by the end of the year. If no kohen is found by the end of the year, it sounds like from the Gemara, so you have to shecht it. And from the Rashi, right, Rashi said it very clearly. You're going to have to shecht it. Either there's no kohen, what do? There's no fridge, there's no freezer. So you'll salt it and, you know, you'll try to make the best of it. After the year is over, so then you're still, and there's no blemish, so you're still watching and you're still taking care of it. What are you going to end up doing when it develops a blemish? So at this point in time, you're basically now on the clock. Meaning, in theory, fundamentally, you should be giving it to the Kohen immediately, but it's understandable that you don't have the Kohen, so you're given a 30-day extension. Good. Okay, that is our first sugya for today. Number two, our Mishnah. Hashochet es bechor maris mumom. So let's say first you shecht and then afterwards you showed the mum to a expert. Okay, a little bit of introduction over here. Okay, in terms of showing the blemish. So if an animal has a physical blemish, so it is now bechor ba mum, and now this, of course, as we know, changes everything. Meaning this allows now the kohen to eat it. Fine. So who can now look at a blemish? So you need to have base information of what the blemishes are. In just a little bit from now, we're going to be learning the sixth parak of the Masechta that goes through all the blemishes of an animal. So, okay, good. That's book smart. So that's wonderful. And then you have to go out to the field. and you need field work, literally. And you have to see the blemishes and take a look at the blemishes. And in fact, a special smicha is given for matir b'charos, right? Remember the Gemara in Sanhedrin at the beginning of the Masechta? So we talked about various types of smichas that are given. There's smicha that's given in Yeridea, meaning in Isser v'Heter, which is that which is permitted, that which is prohibited. There's smicha that's given in terms of monetary law, that's Yadin Yadin. And then there's another smicha, which, you know, nowadays, you know, it's not out there, and that is Matir Bechoros. There's a smicha for allowing a Bechor, the permission of a Bechor, because once now the animal develops a blemish, and that blemish now qualifies halachically as a blemish, so now you'll have this ordained expert in terms of being Matir Bechoros. Ordination, so we all know that ordination is given in Eretz Yisrael. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, there is no formal ordination. There's informal ordination, right? That's why all the Rebbeim and Bavel are referred to as Rav and not as Rebbe, because they have some sort of informal ordination. So as a term of reverence and respect, so we refer to everybody as a Rav. But as far as smicha is concerned, smicha is only given in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, we'll talk later this morning about what rights and privileges do you have once you have smicha. But for our purposes right now, just let's get our basic understanding that you can only show the Bechor to a mumcha. Once the mumcha takes a look at the animal and rules on the animal and says that this, in fact, is a legitimate blemish, it's a mumkavu, it's a permanent blemish, so now you can give it to the Kohen, and the Kohen can now go in and consume it. Okay. Now, in general, is it better to ask questions and then shoot, or is it better to shoot and then ask questions? Now, obviously, that's a silly question. Context really is very important. But over here, obviously, you want to first get a ruling from the Chacham, and then you're going to want to shecht the animal. Let's say first you shechted the animal because you thought it was a blemish, but you didn't bother asking anybody, and you're like, oh, you know what? I forgot to ask my mumcha. So you run over to the mumcha and say, come, I have a blemish to show you. Okay, great. Where? Well, I just shechted the animal. Oh, the animal is dead. Okay, great. Now the pressure, as you can imagine, is on, because here the ruling of the mumcha is going to make all the difference in terms of whether or not it's going to be edible or whether we're going to bury this animal. Okay, so that's obviously a lot of pressure. But pressure aside, what you did was wrong. In other words, you should not have shechted the animal first and then asked the mumcha afterwards. And the Mishnah is now dealing with the scenario of what if you went exactly in that order. And so the Mishnah begins. Hashochet es bechor umare es mumo. And so you shechted first the Bechor, and then afterwards you showed the Mum. Rabbi Yehuda matir. So Rabbi Yehuda says under those circumstances it would be okay. Now Rabbi Yehuda is not happy. He's not excited about the procedurally how it was done, the order in which it was done, but okay. And Rabbi Meir Omer Hovanish Chashalapi Mumcha Aser. And Rabbi Meir says no. Rabbi Meir says that you did not shechted Api Mumcha. You did not go in the proper order. You should have first went to the mumcha and then afterwards have shechted it. And because you didn't go in that order, so therefore it is going to be us, it's going to be prohibited. That's part one of the Mishnah. And then part two of the Mishnah. Let's say somebody's not a mumcha, but nevertheless he likes offering his opinion. He loves it. Okay. Okay, all the cynicism just washed right through me. Okay, I'm cleansed of all my cynicism. But nevertheless, though, he offered his opinion. And Misha and a mumcha v'rosa b'chor, and now somebody asked him, hey, what do you think about this? So he's like, oh, I'd love to give you my opinion. And so he does, he offers it. V'nishchat al piv, and then we shechted it based on his advice and his position. So it has to be buried because that was not a psak that was offered. And Yishalem Mebeso. And on top of that, he also has to pay and make restitution. In other words, he was involved in malpractice. Now, I say malpractice, by the way. We're going to be talking about this later this morning. It's hard to call it malpractice because he's not a practitioner. Meaning he's somebody who was not really authorized to give an opinion. So I say the word malpractice, but with the understanding that it's not really the best way to describe it. He offered an opinion. He really wasn't entitled to an opinion.
The owner of the animal should be paying that because he went to the wrong person.
Wasn't this like Garmi?
We'll get to that as well. Okay, all that we're going to get to in terms of having to pay for offering an opinion. That is, we're going to get to that. Okay, so We're heading right back to the first part of the Mishnah. The first part of the Mishnah is that first you shechted and then you ask questions. That's not the right order. And the Mishnah brought down a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. What is going to be the consequence of doing it in the reverse order? Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah says it's fine, and Rabbi Meir says it's not fine. You didn't do it in the right order, therefore it's going to be prohibited. Now, what the Gemara is going to touch on is the following. Meaning, before we get to the Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir debate, let's deal with a reality issue. I'm speaking reality from the perspective of the Gemara. A physical blemish is an external physical blemish, which generally speaking is not going to change through death. Meaning, we're talking not about any internal organ that may or may not have any kind of pathology in it. We're talking simply about something that's outside of the animal, external to the animal, that is some sort of deformity. We're going to go through all of it in the sixth parak. So over here, is death really going to change the mum? So generally speaking, the answer to that question is no. The Gemara over here is going to identify the mum, the dukan sheba'ayin, the cataracts of the eye, which the Gemara assumes can, I'm going to speak very carefully right now, can change through death, right? The way Rashi describes it, I'll show you the Rashi a little bit later on, is that because of the pain of death, so therefore the eyes can undergo a change. So one thing for sure that is not going to be proof positive of anything is, let's say the blemish was some sort of dukan shebaayin, some form of cataract. Just because we see it post-mortem doesn't necessarily mean that it was there before it died. So over here, if we're talking about something like cataracts, so looking at it after it was shechted is in no way, shape, or form going to tell us that that's what it looked like before it died. Most other blemishes, however, it's going to be the same before and after death. Now, with that piece of information in hand, so now we're going to have a good way of navigating through the Gemara. So the Gemara says that, look, if we're talking about where the blemish was some form of cataract, so there's no debate. Meaning, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir certainly are not going to be debating such an issue. Because we see the cataracts after it was shechted, so what? That doesn't mean that it was there before shechted. That's a reality issue. And so there's no debate about that. Good. So we know for sure that just because you see the cataract after it was shechted does not mean that it was there before it was shechted. And therefore, obviously, you can't eat the animal.
You're saying that's not a qualified mum?
It is a mum. But we don't have evidence that it was there while the animal was alive. Mm-hmm. Okay. So lo nechlegu ela b'mum shebeguf. So the Gemara says that we're talking about the other blemishes which generally don't change through death. Now, Rameir basically says like this. Once we allow blemishes to be checked post-mortem, so then people are not going to make any differentiation between which blemishes we're talking about. And so once we allow it, people will allow it even for the cataracts. And as we all agree, cataracts do change over the course of death. And so therefore, Rameir issues a, and I'm going to be careful about the way I say it, he issues a gzera. That's what it sounds like from the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda says, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Look, I agree if it's cataracts, so then there is no proof positive that just because it was here post-mortem, it was here before the animal was shechted. I agree. But with all other blemishes, it's a constant. It's the blemish was here before, the blemish is going to be here afterwards. The Gemara says, this is a correct pshat in the Mishnah. So the Bryce over here says it exactly the way we just presented it. That according to Rav Yehuda, if we're talking about cataracts, they do change through Shechita. And therefore, if you didn't see it before the animal died, so then seeing it afterwards means nothing. But when it comes to all of the blemishes, it's fine. And Rameir says, no. That we're going to make a gzera. Now at the end of the brace, it says, Mibnei Shei Mishtanim, because they changed. Mibnei Shei Mishtanim, Sagadacha, Mum Shebeguf Mimishtanim. Now, Rameir didn't mean that categorically about all blemishes, so the Gemara explains, El Mibnei HaMishtanim, because of the cataracts that change. Because of the cataracts that change over the course of death, so therefore, a gzera is going to be issued for all other blemishes, even though all other blemishes don't change. I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak, as we're now on the top of the next Amud, Masis Anami Deka. You know, the Mishnah also reads exactly the way we just said it. Because let's read the Mishnah carefully. Remeir Omer Hov Nishcha Shelo Api Mumcha Aser. You shechted Shelo Api Mumcha. Meaning, what is Reb Meir's focus on? What the foul was? What's the foul of the Mishnah? You didn't ask a mumcha. Meaning, in principle, the blemish is still the same. In principle, 99% of the time, except for the cataracts. My numbers are made up. But the most of the time, except for the cataracts, the blemish is not going to change. But what is at issue over here is you went about it all wrong. You first shechted the animal and then you asked the mumcha. So it's a simple reading of the Mishnah. Shalal pi mumcha aser shmamina. Kanasa kakanis Reb Meir shmamina. And now the Gemara just makes a small adjustment in terms of the way the Gemara is describing it. Where now the Gemara says, and therefore, it's a fine. It's a penalty. Now over here, it gets a little bit tricky. We know what Reb Meir's position is. You shech the animal, and then there's a blemish to look at afterwards. Reb Meir says, no, there's nothing to look at. Nothing to see over here. Meaning because you went about it all wrong. Is Reb Meir issuing a gzera? Or, as the Gemara just indicates, is Reb Meir issuing a kanas? Now, there are subtle differences between a gzera versus a kanas in terms of how we're going to paskin. Do we paskin like Reb Meir, whether it's a gzera, whether it's a kanas? But anyway, but the point is that for Reb Meir, the foul in which you did, the violation of law is you did not ask a mumcha before you shechted it. Ibai lehu. Now the Gemara says, let's go back to our cataracts. So we said like this. We said that when an animal shechted, that because of the pain of death, so therefore what ends up happening is that the cataracts change. The Gemara says, now let's clarify that statement. Are we saying that that happens every single time? Or are we saying it could happen, that it could change? Now you have to ask yourself the question, well, what difference does it make? Meaning, even if it could change, that's enough information to tell us that just because we see it after it was shechted doesn't necessarily mean that it was there before it was shechted. So what difference does it make? So the Gemara says, and I'll give you nafkamina, lamai nafkamina, la'achushe sahade. So let's say we have a pair of witnesses, kosher witnesses. Mm-hmm. And the witnesses say, look, we know he went about it all wrong. But we're here to tell you, we saw the eyes before it was shechted, and those are the same as they are right now. So if the witnesses attest to that, so is it possible they're right? So the Gemara says, now good, now we have a nafkamina. If we say that cataracts always change when the animal is shechted, so now they're lying. Or maybe no. Maybe when we say that they change, it means they could change, but not necessarily. And if witnesses are telling us that they were just like this before the animal was shechted, so they could be telling the truth. Now it gets interesting over here because we're taking a look at a physical blemish. Now, even though they're testifying it's the same, meaning it's similar, in other words, based on their testimony, we are now going to suggest that they're exactly the same as they are right now. It's interesting. It sounds like from the Gemara, the answer to that is yes.
Why do we need two witnesses? Why don't we just one witness? If it's like a, you know.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. I hear the question. You could be right. So, my. Tashma da'amar rabba b'chana sachli rabbi Yoshe de Menusha. So the Gemara now quotes a Braisa. No, it may not be a Braisa. Either way. Rabbi Yoshia says, here, come, let me show you. I'm going to show you a case. Now, by virtue of the fact that he says, I'm going to show you a case, so that means that sometimes they change and sometimes they don't change. And the Gemara makes exactly that point. Okay, good. So the Gemara has therefore concluded that it's subject to change, but not necessarily. It doesn't have to change over the course of death. Misha eno mumcha.
Regarding this, who's doing the shechita? If it's Israel and before giving it to Cohen, then there's another knas also involved, no? Another, because he's not supposed to do shechita. This is involving Cohen doing it, right? The Cohen is doing the shechita.
It doesn't.
There would be another penalty too.
It could be. Let's leave it as simple as it's presented right now. Okay. And now the Mishnah went on to describe somebody who was not a mumcha, so he was not certified, he was not given smicha, and nevertheless he offered an opinion. And he offered an opinion, and we shechted it based on his position. Now the Lema Tanan Stama Kareb Meir. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. Take the two sides of the Mishnah, the two parts of the Mishnah, and let's put them side by side. What just happened? In the first half of the Mishnah, we talked about shechting and then asking somebody's opinion. In the second half of the Mishnah, we got somebody's opinion, but somebody who was really not in a position to give us his opinion. And he did anyway. In the second half of the Mishnah, according to Rav Yehuda, all is not lost. Meaning, okay, so we got a non-expert opinion. Good. But we shechted the animal, according to Rav Yehuda, so let's get an expert. And let's get the expert to tell us what's happening. Are you mean to tell me now that the second half of the Mishnah is only going like Rabbi Meir? That's the Gemara's question. Mm-hmm. Because according to Rabbi Meir, once you shech the animal, game over. Meaning, we cannot get an expert's opinion after you shech the animal because of either, we can call it a gzera, we can call it a kanas. The Gemara used both of those terms. But you can't ask an expert after that point in time. So, lema tanan stomach Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Dimo dukun bedukun shabayim v'divrei akol. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. It could very well be that the mum whose opinion was given was over the cataracts. And as we just learned together, the state of the cataracts post-mortem is indicative of nothing in terms of what it was prior to Shechita. Okay, so that could be the Mishnah, and therefore the Mishnah could be going like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, Tana. Kishu Mishalam Mishalam Reveal Adako Mechza Lagasa. All right, now, what we're talking about now is this person who was not qualified to offer an opinion, gave an opinion, we shechted it based on his position, and we now say that it's no good. And because of that, so now he has to pay. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. The Braisa makes a qualification. The Braisa says he has to pay, but he does not have to make full restitution. Even though he did damages, but he does not need to make full restitution. Now, why not? So, my timer. No, I'm sorry. Before we get to the umechsa legasa, so let's first tackle the half, and then we'll get to the quarter. So he, the one who offered an opinion, only has to pay half. Why does he only have to pay half? Rashi kishumala mishal mekamen nos in revua damav mishum bechor behema daka or bechor behema gasa chasi damav. So Rashi explains that he has to pay half for the behema gasa, and again we're going to get to quarter in just a moment. Mishum hachi mishalim mechza, the mamana muta basafiku. Okay. Why is he paying half? Because did he actually do damages? Maybe yes, maybe no.
And Tulumi did damages.
Just give me 1 second. The ikala meimar, apseda kule, the ilo havisharile, hachi, ki have maisile kami mumche, gamor, visharile, vahave achole, vahasha bai kavura. Because here's what happened. It could very well be that it was in fact a blemish. But he was not authorized to offer an opinion. Now, had they gone to an expert and had the expert ruled that it was a mum, so then it would have been shechted and it would have been consumed. But now because he's the one who offered an opinion, so therefore now it has to be buried. That is now full damages. On the other hand, ikala meimar delav midi afsadei. On the other hand, maybe he caused no loss. Didema lo have mumma. Because maybe this blemish was not a blemish. And even had he gone to a mumcha, the mumcha would have said, this is nothing. And and then the eventuality is that maybe a blemish never would fall on this animal. And and then the animal dies, and then we're left with nothing. So in other words, there are two real possibilities in terms of what would happen if you had a bechor and had he said nothing. One is that you wouldn't have went to an expert and he would have said, yeah, that's a blemish, go ahead, eat it. Or two, you would have went to the expert and the expert would have said, no, that's nothing. And then you'd just be holding it on for it indefinitely, and then it dies and you walked away with nothing. So now, this person who told you what to do, even though he was unauthorized to do so, and you listened to him, so the damages that he did, maybe yes, maybe no. And so this is what's called in halacha, mamana muta basafik, and subchas is of the opinion that that is to be divided. Now, it gets a little bit tricky because, generally speaking, we don't pass like simchas. Okay, so that is in of itself its own discussion. But in the meantime, however, that's the mechza as it relates to the behema gasa. Good. That's step one. Now we're going to go on to step number two. What about the quarter for the behema daka? That the Gemara tackles. The Gemara says, Meshalam revila daka mechza lagasa. My taima. The Gemara's question, my taima, why should that be? It's so funny. The Gemara is basically... Gemara assumes that we figured out the mechza lebehema gasa, the half payment. But we went through Rashi, so we basically got somewhat of a handle on it. Now the Gemara wants to know, but why for a quarter for behema daka, for a small animal? Amar Rav Papa, zehef sin ruba, zehef sin muad. So the Gemara says, well, you know, when if it's a large animal, that's a lot of loss. And if it's a small animal, well, it's only a little bit of loss. So the Gemara says, well, that's not a good explanation. I don't understand. We're talking about fractions over here. So once you're talking about fractions, what difference does it make if it's a large animal or if it's a small animal? Meaning if you pay half damages for the large animal, but pay half damages for the small animal. So the size of the loss should be totally irrelevant once we're in the world of fractions, because everything now is prorated. So Amar Rav Huna bar Manoch Mishmei de Rav Acha bar Ika Mishum Gzeres Migadli Behem Adaka Naguba. So the Gemara over here says that there's another consideration, and that is because of Migadli Behem Adaka, because you raise small animals. Now what does that mean? So Rashi does struggle a little bit with trying to explain what this means. He doesn't struggle. He offers a couple of pshatim. Take a look at Rashi inside Mishum Gzeres Migadli Behem Adaka Naguba. Rashi writes Mishum Torech Migadli Behem Adaka Sheish Bo Torech Gadol Legadla. So over here, on one hand, this guy caused you a loss. On the other hand, he saved you some money. Because raising small animals, it is a lot of expense. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, I cannot believe that you ruled that it was a blemish. And then on the other hand, I can't believe I listened to you. And then I shechted it. And now I lost everything. But at the same time, however, I don't have to the expense of having to feed it all this while. The Shemim Harula Acher Lo Haya Matir Lo Vayelo Od Tipo Maruba. Continuing on Rashi, Ashi Pal Bomum Lahachi Nagabad Lo Mishalam El Revia. Okay, so the reason why his payment is only a quarter is because on one hand he ruled incorrectly, and he caused you a loss. On the other hand, and he should pay you half, as we explained previously. But on the other hand, because of the Torech that he possibly saved you. So therefore, his penalty is reduced down to a quarter of its original value. It's a difficult pshat. Rashi offers it. Okay. Lishna achrina mimnei gzeres megalim behem adaka shover maldivir chachamim kedinam bebekama ein megalim behem adaka beretz Yisrael kansu chachamim dolo lishkol ela riv'a. Rashi's second pshat, really interesting. You know, raising small animals in Eretz Yisrael, right? That's banned. Now, I know that sounds a little bit funny. In other words, we need small animals. Like it's like necessary. It could very well be that the ban of raising small animals is a zoning issue, meaning in certain areas it's okay, certain areas it's not okay. But anyway, you're not allowed to raise small animals in Eretz Yisrael. Let's leave it like that. So if that's the and the Gemara in Baba Kama goes on to describe why that should be. It's at the end of the Masechta. Anyway, so because you were in violation of the raising of small animals in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore, even though the person who was involved in malpractice needs to pay you back, but we're going to basically lessen his penalty because you were also in the wrong as well. That's Rashi's second shot. Okay.
This is all not at the time of Beit HaMikdash, right? Because if there's a Beit HaMikdash, then...
Correct. All this is now... Right, as I mentioned, the Mishnah, I know it's a little bit confusing because the Mishnah threw in a line about and during the time of the Beit HaMikdash, right. But all this is Bizmanenu. It's in our time where the only thing that would allow it is just a blemish.
I'm not sure what loss did the owner have. It's not his animal. It's a...
The loss was to the Kohen. But still there was a loss.
But he's not paying the Kohen.
From Rashi, it sounds like he's paying the Kohen for the loss. It sounds that way from the Rashi.
Which Kohen, though? How could
any Kohen? We'll speak after. Okay. Danas adin zika zechay v'chay v'zazakei tima satar v'tira satame masha asa asri v'shalom mibeso. Okay. You have somebody who you went to as a judge, and you judged in all these cases. Now, this sounds familiar. Should sound familiar. Right, we've seen this Mishnah quoted a number of times in Baba Kama. It was quoted a couple times also in Sanhedrin. And here in Bechoros now, the Mishnah is quoted again. So, and he judged incorrectly. And it doesn't matter whether it's monetary law or whether it's Tumat Tahara. If he is not a mumcha, so then what he did was incorrect, egregious. We can use a lot of adjectives to describe it. And... Vishal me beso, and he's got to pay for that. Now, imayam mumcha lebeisdin potter melasham. Now, if it's a mumcha, so he's indemnified as a mumcha, as an expert. So, in other words, once you're given a certain license and degree, right? I'm speaking in modern terms, but it's the same idea. Once you're given a certain license and degree, and you are practicing, so at that point in time, you are in the you are under the umbrella of I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and I got the education, the background, the expertise, and so all this is now in the falls under the category of I'm indemnified. And the Mishnah says under those circumstances you don't have to pay. Now, but let's go back to the first part of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that if you rule incorrectly on monetary law and you were not a mumcha and you were not given smicha, and or you were metame something or metare something that was incorrect as well, so you have to pay for loss. And so now, Ben raised this issue earlier, and now the Gemara is going to tackle this issue head on. In other words, you're going to have to pay for loss. Well, what did you actively do? You verbalized and people listened to you. But in other words, in terms of damages, we know damages require active damaging, right? We saw this in Baba Kama again and again. It's one of the biggest themes throughout Baba Kama, is that nezek damages is only biyadayim, only when I actively take your possessions and I break it, right? Or I take a car and I run something over with it. But in other words, but if I'm just speaking and people decide to listen to me, so obviously we're not condoning by any stretch of the imagination. But simply in terms of the payment and the nezek damages that you have to pay, so you're not obligated, at least bidei adam. Bidei shamayim, we can have a discussion, but bidei adam, you're not obligated to pay. So what's the Mishnah talking about? And that's the Gemara's question.
So for false, so for an error in your advice, you're not a
mumcha.
So legal advice or.
Right, and you're not authorized to offer it. So then you're going to be responsible. But the Gemara's question is, but why are you going to be responsible? It's not nezek biyadayim. Mm-hmm. So lematanan stamaka Rav Meir de dan din de garmi. Now Rav Meir happens to be of the position that he does obligate to pay somebody, even though it's grumma, even though it's indirect damages. There is a lengthy discussion we are not going to have in terms of the subtle differences between grumma and garmi. There may not be a difference. Rashi seems to suggest there's no difference. For our purposes right now, we're going to keep it nice, sweet, and right to the point. The point is it's not direct damages, and Rameyer does, in fact, hold somebody liable, financially liable, even for indirect damages. And so, therefore, is our Mishnah following the viewpoint of Rameyer? And it's really more of a question, meaning, and that means our Mishnah is only going like Rameyer, and all those who don't subscribe to Rameyer is not going to agree to our Mishnah? So Amar Rabbi Alai, Amar Rav Kigon Shenasam Nasam Biyad. So the Gemara deflects, and the Gemara says, "Well, it could very well be that this judge, he was very handsy, and it meant like this. Let's say I have now in front of me the two litigants, and me as the judge. So not only do I issue a verbal ruling, but just to make sure that everyone understands, right, that he owes him money. So I go over, I take his money, and I give it to him." So now, not only did I just issue a verbal ruling, but I actually handle the money. So the Gemara says, okay, but it doesn't fit into every one of the cases of the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, Bishlam Achayv Esazake Gon Shenasam Nasam Yad Elazikas Achayav Hechidami. But let's say I said somebody was really obligated, and I said, nah, he's not obligated. So what happened? No money transferred. What's the case in the Mishnah where no money was transferred? How can this be nezek biyadayim? So ida amale pater ata vehalo nasav nasam biyad. Gemara just simply highlights the question. Amar Ravina kigon shahaya lo mashkon venat lo hemenu. So the Gemara says, okay, it's very simple. Let's say that I have the lender right here, and I say to the lender, he doesn't know you. And then what I say to the lender is, and you were holding his collateral? Okay, thank you very much. And I take the collateral from the lender and I hand it right back to the borrower. So good. So that's a case where I say no money should be transferred, but at this very same time, I take the collateral away from the lender, give it back to the borrower. Good. So that would be a case where I got my hands involved in the action, and therefore this nezek biyadayim. Can we do this for tuma as well? The Gemara says, yes, we can. Tima satara da'aga v'hu sheretz. So let's say, for example, someone came to me with an item and said, is it tuma or is it tahor? And it's questionable. And I offered my non-certified opinion, and I said it's tame. And on top of that, I'm all like, you're questioning me. So I take out a sheretz, which I always carry around, and I take the sheretz and I touch it to the item, and I'm like, it's tame now, okay? It was tame before, it's tame now, okay? And or tier is a tame. Now, something was really tamei, and I was mitaret. How does that happen? Mm-hmm. Meaning, how can you do that biyadayim? Shirvam peirosav. So what I did is, as I took it, I'm like, I'm telling you it's tahor. Oh, really? Right? You're questioning me? And I take it, and I mix it with fruit that's tahor. And so now, biyadayim, right? I created a mixture. Okay. And which is obviously going to be usher. Okay. So all this now is just a way of deflecting, because either you really have two possibilities with the Mishnah. Either the Mishnah is subscribing to the viewpoint of Reb Meir, and Reb Meir holds that Dina Degarmi, that even though it's indirect damages, but he holds people liable for that, or our Mishnah can be going like the Chachamim, who don't agree with Reb Meir, and just simply inject in every one of these cases a case of Nezik B'Adam. Let's do one more Mishnah and one more Gemara. Maisa B'Parsha Nitla Im Shalav Ve'Echila Rabbi Tarfon L'Klavim. Okay, there was a cow, and a hysterectomy was done, and they removed the uterus of the cow. And Rabbi Tarfon says, okay, now it's a treifa. And as a result of that, they gave it to the dogs, because he paskened. And they went over to the Chachamim and said, is this a treifa, yes or no? And the Chachamim said, well, no, it's not a treifa. The animal's fine. Animal can live without its uterus. So, v'itirua. Sha'amar, right, just with a little gears to change. Sha'amar tudas arofe, ein para v'chazir yotzim alexandra shamatrayim, shein chotkan ha'im shalah, b'shol shalot teleid. In fact, whenever they exported their cows and the pigs were exported from Egypt, so how do they protect their intellectual property? So it's very simple, because they didn't want replication.
Those horses also, no.
It's so funny. That was the glitch in my head. You literally got it. So anyway, okay. I'm just reading the Mishnah. So how do they protect their intellectual property and make sure that there's no replication? So it's very simple. So they took out the copying machine. So they took the uterus out of these animals before exportation. That's it. In other words, you want to get that kind of quality again? You're going to come back to us. Okay. Right, trying to control trade, it's not a new phenomenon. So the shalav b'shul shalot teled. So I'm Rabbi Tarfon, halcha chamorcha Tarfon. So now Rabbi Tarfon now bemoans his own position, because he ruled erroneously. He was incorrect in his ruling, and as a result of that, he knows now. Okay, what do I have to do? I have to pay. So Amar Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon ata mumcha labesim, v'chol mumcha labesim patam l'shalim. So Rabbi Kiva says to Rabbi Tarfon, get a grip. You're not going to have to pay. You're mumcha, you're certified. Meaning, we're not saying, in other words, people make mistakes, that's fine. But you received smicha, you're one of the musmachim, you are therefore indemnified. You are now practicing, in other words, with the certification and the licenses, and you had every right to do so. Okay, you made a mistake. That's fine. It happens, and you were certified. You're not going to have to pay. Now, the typically the Tal de Bedvar Mishnah, the Tal Bedvar Mishnah Choser. So the Gemara says, okay, but on top of that, the Gemara notes that for another reason altogether, he's not going to have to pay, because what kind of mistake are we talking about? This is what's called Tal Bedvar Mishnah. So Tal Bedvar Mishnah. So if you issue a ruling that goes against the Beferish Mishnah, so you have every right to recant that position, because that position is just simply an untenable position. So So the Gemara says really two things could have happened. One is that when Rabbi Tarfon issues his ruling to begin with, because it was such an egregious error, it went against the Mishnah, so therefore it's retractable, and that's one reason why he wouldn't have to pay. And va'od on top of that, inami b'shikol hadas ti'ata, and even if the issue was, is that it was a call, it was a questionable call, which is not retractable, but also at the very same time, for another reason you're not going to have to pay, and that's because you're mumcha, because you're licensed, you're certified. And mumcha labesin atav v'chol mumcha labesin patam l'shalim. Okay, we'll stop here.